Okay, speakers are turned on. Microphone is, in theory, adjusted. That's a little loud. Let's bring that down. Here we go. Trumpenfuhrer is still president in the year of our Lord and Savior, the Trumpenfuhrer, 2020. The impeachment circus is whatever the fuck that is. I don't really know where that is because I don't care because it's the news. I mean, who fucking pays attention to the news other than the losers? God, I remember back in the day when I was a news junkie. I mean, oh, I used to watch the news religiously because I thought I was getting something out of that. You can scream, shout, whine, cry, snivel, piss, moan, look for a fucking safe space. This ain't it. Dig in your heels and hold on tight. You can shove your opinions up your ass. That way the Trump and Fuhrer's cock has something to keep it company. Either you are wrong or I am right. Don't forget, my friends, you ever present the most likely the third possibility. You are wrong and I am right. Go fuck yourselves. Crowd is wild. Good morning, children. It is morning. What is this? It's the 4th of January in the year of our Lord and Savior, the Trumpenfuhrer, 2020. This is Stating the Obvious Podcast. It is the weapons platform for which I launch the truth, missile my intellect, homes, and destroy status. I swear, I'm trying to figure out, is the microphone slowly creeping down, or is it just my paranoia? I thought I had it adjusted. Am I paranoid? Just remember, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you. All right, I think we're going to go ahead. And, oh God, I had this terrible revelation because a couple of days ago I was sitting there thinking, it's 2020, blah, blah, blah. This is a fucking election year. This is a presidential election year. Trumpenfuhrer has been president for 3 years. Still no wall. America's not great again. But more importantly, we're going to have to suffer through another fucking presidential election. Oh, God. Just. You know, it'd almost be worth electing presidents for life just to not have to suffer through. And again, kind of the whole media part, because I just don't look at the media, I don't look at the news, I don't pay attention. That part's annoying, but the more annoying part is all the fucking normies around me. They're going to not be able to shut the fuck up about the election. Yeah, because I give a shit about your opinion on the, no, just please stop. Oh God. It's going to be so painful. Anyway, we're not going to talk about that. Just say it's terrible. Speaking of things that are terrible, you folks might be saying, great one. So how is the movie Midsommar coming along? Well, that's the first thing we're going to talk about because I watched some more of it. Oh my, I'm dead serious. This movie is so fucking millennial. So where we left off, our heroes, such as they are, who I still want all of them to die. I hate all of these characters. Our heroes showed up there in, I already forgot where we're at, Sweden? In a country with a bunch of white people. There's no diversity in this little Swedish town. You know, it's all white people. Most of them have blonde hair. I mean, there's no people of color. There's no trannies. I mean, there's no Muslims. I've just never seen so much racism and intolerance in one place ever. Well, except when I watched the Japanese Godzilla movies that had all those Japanese people in it. And, well, no Muslims and no white people and no black people. Anyhow. So they showed up and, of course, they had to immediately, upon meeting other people, do drugs. So they did some mushrooms. And I had to sit here and actually watch a scene in the movie of people tripping on mushrooms. Why do I want to... This is a 2.5 hour movie. Why do I want to watch people sitting in a field tripping on mushrooms? Saying incredibly great dialogue like, wow, man, if you lay down, it's better. Everybody should lay down. No, really, all of you need to lay down right now. Lay down. Oh, look, there's some new people coming. Oh, I don't think I can handle any new people right now. I'm like, seriously? You filmed this? They did. They filmed this. They put this in the film. This got through the fucking editing. I mean, it's one thing, okay, if we film, you're going to be, hey, let's go do some mushrooms. Okay, let's go do some mushrooms. But I don't need to watch you having your mushroom trip. And remember, this is supposed to be some kind of a horror movie. Maybe not horror in, like, monster horror sense, right? Because I don't think there's supernatural beings, and there's no aliens, and there's no monsters. I mean, the monsters in this movie are, of course, the white people. We'll get to that. But this is a horror movie. Other thing I've noticed about filming this is you can tell... All right, so there's an old saying that about militaries that you can tell the last war a military... military? My phrasing doesn't seem right. Military... You can tell the last war a military force fought. You can tell where the... God, I can't fucking articulate this thought at all. You can tell what terrain a army fought its last war in based on their foot gear. Right? So when we went into Vietnam, which was a jungle, everybody still had boots that were serviceable in World War II and Korea. And they quickly found out that those things held water like a motherfucker, and you were walking around in swamps and shit in Vietnam. So they came up with what, when I was in the military, was called jungle boots. So the jungle boots had little eyelets on the bottom to drain out water, and they had canvas sides. Okay, so then, after Vietnam, jungle boots were all the rage. And then, of course, we went into the desert wars over in the Middle East. And again, what was the first one, Desert Storm or whatever. And you saw all these men, troops. So this was back in the days when the military had men in it, not women. You saw all of these soldiers in the desert wearing jungle boots. So the point is, so now, of course, our entire military is geared towards fighting in desert territories because we got to send all these people over to all of these desert countries on the other side of the planet to spread democracy and protect oil. I mean, and this is not, oh, the evil corporations. We're just calling it what it is. I mean, that is what they're there for. It's easier to invest all this money in going over there and shooting people and blowing things up than to just buy the fucking oil or something. I don't know. We're not going to talk about that today. That's not the point. The point is, so then the army finally figured out, hey, we shouldn't wear jungle boots in the desert. So now they have boots that are designed for the desert. So now wherever our next war is, and there will be another one because we are an empire, when the troops go into that war zone, they're going to be wearing boots designed for the desert instead of boots designed for whatever terrain they're fighting in at that time. And so the footwear of the military, of the army specifically, because, I mean, the Navy, they're always on a ship. The Air Force, they're always sitting around in their fucking chairs doing nothing because the Air Force is gay. I mean, gayer than homosexuals. There's like homosexual gay. I mean, there's like, okay, it's one thing like if you're a man and you suck another man's dick and then let him shoot cum on your face. I mean, that's gay, but that's nowhere near as gay as being in the Air Force because the Air Force is the gayest fucking organization in the history of the human species, like ever. You can always tell where the United States Army was in their previous war by looking at their boots. With movies, you can tell what was a thing, you know, 5 years ago based on looking at the cinematography of a movie. You know, Ridley Scott did Alien, and then suddenly there's all these movies that look like Alien, right? CGI became a thing, and 5 years later, CGI is everywhere. Well, this movie, you can tell what really broke into the mainstream 5 years ago. And that was drone photography. Because there's all these scenes in the movie which have very obviously been filmed using a camera on a drone. And once again, I don't need another 25-second clip filmed from a drone flying over a forest. Okay, it's true. All right. Hold on. This microphone is definitely slipping. Or I'm just losing my fucking mind, which is completely possible. Completely 100 fucking percent possible. All right. But it's just this endless footage of the drone flying around. And there's one point they're driving in the car and the drone flies over the car and it like flips upside down. So now we're filming the car driving upside down. I mean, what? This is not artsy. This is not nouveau. This is not whatever the fuck you millennials think you are. Okay? This is not good cinematography. This is very boring. This is very basic. This looks like every other piece of fucking drone footage on YouTube. God, it's terrible. All right. So our protagonists get to the village, or they get to the outskirts of the village. They meet all these other kids that are coming back. Because apparently it's like the Amish. Is it the Amish? Where at some point you leave the community, you go out into the quote-unquote real world to see what it's like to be surrounded by freaks, and then you come back to where the normal people are at. So apparently in this Swedish village, they do the same thing. They send their kids out to see how fucked up the world is, and they come back to where people are normal. So our protagonists, they meet up with all of the other people who are coming back. They do their mushrooms. They have their trip. You know, our little heroine. Oh, by the way, I called her Helen because the character's name is Danny. So, you know, and Danny has this freak out because, oh my God, they're laughing at me. And they're like, no, they're just laughing. You know, again, because, oh my God, they're laughing at me. Yes, because these people who have never met you before in their life are laughing at you because you are, of course, the center of the cosmos because, well, you're a white woman from North America and everything revolves around you. So they have their trip and she freaks out. She freaks out while tripping on mushrooms. Who knew? Who knew that could happen? All right, so they go to the village, and I said the village, they have to walk to the village because they have to go down the trail because there's no fucking car to get there. There's no road to get there. They get to the village. It's a bunch of white people, so obviously it's racist. All right. So some shit happens, and it's blah, blah, blah. All right. So we get, and they're talking about, oh, here we live, like, when you're kids, you live in this big common house together, and everybody's, so it's actually kind of socialist because there's, oh yeah, the children are raised by everybody. I'm like, oh God, that's sad. But so you have the four phases of life, right? You're like born to however old and you're this, and then you're born, and then from that age to this age, you go out and you do this, whatever. And then from like 30 something to something, something, that's fall because it revolves around the seasons, and that's when you work and you're a productive member of the community, blah blah. And then from like whatever 60 to 74 or whatever, that's winter, and that's when you're retired and you're an elder in the village, right? And all this other stuff. And they're like, well, what happens after, one of our protagonists asks, well, what happens after you're 74 years old? And it's sort of not answered. It's not sort of not answered, it's not answered. Okay. So we're doing all this stuff, and we have these ceremonies going on, and we're starting this midsummer festival thingy. And so we do this ceremony, and two old people come out, and they do some and they eat some food. They do some stuff. Okay, the two old people sit down on some chairs. The chairs are picked up. They carry them up to the top of a cliff. So there's a big cliff, and at the bottom of the cliff, there's this big rock that's flat on top, like a giant altar. And everybody else is standing down at the bottom, and the two old people are up at the top. Now, those of us who are intelligent, coupled with the inability of the millennials or millennial wannabes who made this movie to avoid telegraphing things, are looking at this, and we can figure this out. So nobody answers the question of what happens to you after you're 74 years old, coupled with you've got two old people standing at the top of a cliff. I wonder, do you think the old people are going to jump off the cliff and kill themselves? No, that could there's no telegraphing here at all. Nobody could possibly see that coming. No one. I really hate it when movies are so fucking predictable. Once again, to go back to my favorite one of my favorite movies at least, Alien, right? The Chess Buster. Nobody saw that coming. I knew it was coming because I read the book before I went to see the movie, but I remember this very vividly. We're sitting in the theater, me and my mother, and you know, they find the little dead face hugger, and they're poking on it. My mother's like, well, it can't be dead. I'm like, no, Mom, it's dead. She's like, well, how can it be dead? The movie is over if it's dead. I'm like, oh, yeah, just you wait. Right? No one saw that coming. This movie telegraphs it like a motherfucker. Now, of course, our protagonist, because they're all college-age millennials who do drugs in pretty much every fucking scene, are all stupid. And they can't figure out what's about to happen. So now let me throw this in. Also, so we've got our four. We got Danny, her loser boyfriend who wants to dump her but doesn't have the balls. And we've got the token black guy who is also, of course, the smartest person in the group. They're there because of him. He's the one writing the thesis on Midsummer Festivals, which once again, I don't know what kind of degree you get where your thesis would be about Midsummer Festivals, but I can guarantee you, even though he's supposed to be the smartest person because, you know, we gotta pedestalize black people, his degree can't be very good because, I mean, what kind of job are you going to get with that? Hey, I wrote a thesis on Midsummer Festivals in Europe. Okay, well, can you design a bridge? Well, no. Can you program a computer? No. Can you fix the plumbing or the electrical? No. Can you pour concrete? No. I mean, what do you do? What diploma is that? What do you do with that other than be a parasite? Then we've got the Swedish guy who brought them there, and which I guess he doesn't count. And then, so the other one is the white dude bro kind of guy who keeps looking at all the chicks and going, whoa, man, that's hot, but doesn't have the balls to actually talk to any of them. Now, also, another person from the village brought back two friends of his whom we've met. I haven't paid enough attention. This may have been in the movie. I don't know. I don't know what country they're from. Okay. They're both brown. Got to have some POCs in there because it's all these white people. This is important. The skin color is important. They're both brown, and they are from some westernized country. If they're not from the United States, they're from somewhere in Europe. So here's the important part. Stick with me here. They are millennial age, like college age, less than 30, college age brown people. Now, statistically speaking, I know, I understand, you know this one brown person who votes Republican. That's great. Congratulations on you for knowing somebody. I'm so proud of you. Here's a pat on your back. Statistically speaking, a college-age brown person is going to be of what political orientation? Exactly. Now, hold that thought and follow me. So the two old people are up on top of the cliff. Everybody else, including our non-villagers, are all down at the bottom. And the first old person, a woman, she jumps off the cliff and she face dives into the rock and it smashes her head open and everything. And we have to see this in slow motion. And once again, look, I don't mind the grossness, but okay, fine. It's like, it where's the line between gratuitous and not gratuitous? But so we see her smash her face, her head explodes and everything, and the blood flies. So everybody down at the bottom is just fine. But all of our non-villagers are like, what the fuck? Because once again, none of them, somehow or another, none of them managed to see this coming. The two brown people, man and a woman, they're a couple, they're engaged. We also had to go through that. Because with Danny and her loser boyfriend, then the two brown people like, oh, we've only known each other for whatever, 2 years or something, and we're engaged. And Danny's like, oh, we've been dating for 3 years. Why aren't we engaged? You know, and so just the drama. That's the other thing. That's why this is such a millennial movie. Like, I remember when I was a kid, we had horror movies, right? Like Freddy Krueger and shit. We're 45 minutes into the fucking movie, and mostly it's been... I mean, other than these two people jumping off the cliff. Oh my God, I gave it away. The second person jumps off the cliff. I bet you couldn't figure that out on your own. Other than two people jumping off the cliff, this entire movie has been people having mental issues, people arguing about their relationships, and people doing drugs. I mean, that's it. That's the entire fucking first 45 minutes of this movie so far. Back in my day, you know, back when, you kids off my lawn. Back in my day, horror movie. You had like 7 minutes of figuring out who the characters were, and you're dead right into people getting slashed. So the two brown people start freaking out, and the guy is screaming, you people are fucked, you people are fucked, you're fucked, you're fucked, just over and over, you're fucked, you're fucked, you're fucked, because this woman jumped off the cliff and killed herself. So then the man, he jumps off the cliff, he doesn't land right, because he does it wrong, he tries to land like he's a fucking paratrooper, so he lands straight down on his foot, he breaks his leg, and we more nice graphic shots, and he's still alive, so they people on the ground, they walk up and they've got a big giant mallet and they smash his head with the mallet to put him out of his misery. Meanwhile, the brown people are still screaming and freaking out and the brown guy is going, you're fucked, you're fucked, you're fucked, you're all fucked. One of the older women from the village goes to the younger guys who brought these people in, and she says, why didn't you explain to them what was going to happen? And of course, we know why what was going to happen wasn't explained, because then we wouldn't have this scene in the movie, because this was supposed to be a surprise, even though it was telegraphed like a motherfucker. But more importantly, now here's the important part. Here's the millennial part. Here's why the brown people being liberals is important. Now let's think about this for 1 second. And also, of course, not just the two brown people, because they're the ones who are vocalizing the most, but our other white protagonist from the United States and our black protagonist from the United States, they were, you know, having looks of disgust or reaction or whatever, but not quite vocalizing it. But all of these young college age people, we're all having an adverse reaction to two old people, 74 years old, jump voluntarily. This is important now. We're getting into the important part. I need you to wake up and, you know, just get over your the great one is racist thing and pay attention. Two 74-year-old people voluntarily. Now, you might say, well, they were pressured into it by their society. Right, Because in Western civilization, nobody does anything out of social pressure. If you're going to tell me that social pressure is a bad thing, then you have to rethink everything about our society. Everything. Because right now, especially with political correctness and people getting doxxed and people getting fired from their jobs for voting for Donald Trump or whatever, social pressure is driving our entire civilization. So don't even attempt to make the argument that social pressure is a bad thing, unless you're willing to give up all of that. Two 74-year-old people voluntarily jump off of a cliff and commit suicide. And this is terrible. This means that the people in that society, according to the brown man, are fucked. They're fucked. Now, according to the very same protagonist, right? Danny, college-age girl with mental problems who's on medication. Her boyfriend, college-age guy who doesn't know what he's going to write his thesis about and does drugs all the time. College-age black guy who's doing a thesis on midsummer festivals and is therefore getting a worthless degree. College-age and does drugs all the time. College-age guy who does drugs all the time and looks at girls but doesn't have the balls to talk to any of them. And then two college-age brown people. So according to those people, this is a bad thing. Now, all of those people, if the two 74-year-old people who jumped off that cliff, if those two 74-year-old people were in a hospital and a doctor euthanized them, those people would completely support that concept, even if the doctor euthanized them against their will. These are the very same people who can't shut up about the right to die and euthanasia. Also consider that if these two 74-year-old people who voluntarily jumped off the cliff and committed suicide were not 74-year-old people, but were in fact 7-month-old fetuses, and a doctor or other medical professional, I don't know if you have to be a doctor, a person took a long needle attached to a vacuum cleaner and shoved it up a woman's cooch and into the skull of these 7-month-old people and sucked out their brains and then pulled the fetus out of the woman's vagina and threw it in the trash can, they would celebrate that as a woman's right to choose. So watching these millennial characters having these adverse responses to people voluntarily killing themselves, while knowing at the same time these characters, statistically speaking, are completely in favor of doctors euthanizing old people, and knowing that they are completely in favor of women aborting and murdering their unborn children, it's just pathetic. If you little fuckers are into this my body, my choice shit, you should be completely supportive of a person's decision to kill themselves. And certainly, all of these characters would be 100% in favor of Jeffrey Epstein killing himself, because that prevents a whole lot of politicians and powerful people from being exposed as pedophiles. Finally, the brown people are yelling at the white people that they're fucked. Well, where's your tolerance for other cultures? So let me see if I got this right. The white people in this village are fucked because some of them voluntarily commit suicide when they turn 74. But African culture is wonderful and tolerant and diverse because in Africa, people have sex with 9-year-old girls because they think having sex with a virgin cures AIDS. Got it. This makes total sense to me. And that's as far as I've gotten, because since then I've kind of had the time, but just not had the interest. I'm going to watch the rest of the movie because I got to see where this goes. It's so fucking bad. Among the things I have been doing is listening to The Dick Show. And we got to talk about The Dick Show for a moment, because, and you can find it on the YouTubes, and there's a supercut that I did watch the supercut. Dick, this is a long story. So Dick Masterson, back in the day when he wrote the book Men Are Better Than Women, you can also find the website menarebetterthanwomen.com, and it's a fucking hilarious book. Oh God, is it funny? And it's funny because it's true. Dick was on the Dr. Phil show as a misogynist and all this other stuff. So anyhow, then the doctor, you know, apparently, whatever, they do the Dr. Phil show and it went into the void, right? Because this is back in the ancient days. So for years and years and years, Dick has been trying to find copies of the Dr. Phil show that he was on. Well, somebody finally found them somewhere over in some Scandinavian country, I think, coincidentally. So maybe someone was jumping off a cliff and that's when they found them. I don't know. So they're on YouTube now. If you Google Dick Masterson, Dr. Phil, whatever, you should find them, or YouTube search it. And then there's a supercut where somebody, I assume, just took all, because it's not just Dick Masterson. It's four episodes. It's not just Dick Masterson. It's six people. There's like this woman who's mega religious, and there's some guy who hates society or whatever, and there's a woman who's a man hater, and there's Dick who hates women, and then there's like two other chicks. I don't even remember what their shtick was. But somebody took all of the Dick Masterson bits and put them all together, and it's about a 45-minute video, and I watched that. Let me tell you, it is fucking hilarious. Oh my God, it is funny. It is so funny. And the best part is, so they put all these people in a house together. They have to live with each other. And Dick is sleeping in the same room as the woman who hates men. And they're arguing. And the woman says something. They're going back and forth. And the woman is, I don't remember the exact dialogue that builds up to it. But Dick says something about, I can't get a word in edgewise because you're talking so fast. And the woman says, well, that's because you talk really slow. And then Dick says, well, that's because I'm thinking. Fucking hilarious. Anyhow, so go watch that. That's kind of not the point. I'm not going to give you the play-by-play. It exists. Here's the important part. The first important part is that they're out there and you can watch them and they're funny. The second part is that Dick, on The Dick Show, now, modern day, he found the man-hating woman that was on there with him, and he got her to call into the show. And of course, you know, and they're talking about this, what was projected on Dr. Phil was nothing like reality. She's like, I'm not a man-hater. Like, and she talks about how they basically pressured her into saying she hates men, you know, and how she was completely presented incorrectly, like none of that was who she was, and she and Dick were talking. Anyway, she sued Dr. Phil. That pissed Dick. He's like, wait, why didn't you get me in on this lawsuit? So she sued Dr. Phil for the shit that Dr. Phil people did to her during the filming process, not for how they presented her on TV, but for all the shit they did behind the scenes to fuck with her. Because again, so, and this made this interesting. This is in, shit, what episode was this in? If I can find it, I'll link it to you in the show notes so you can listen to it. But it's interesting because they just talk about how they were manipulated and, you know, they were manipulated and antagonized in order to make better television, which of course we all know that. Again, nobody's sitting here thinking that Dr. Phil is a fucking documentary. We all know that. But the point is, she's talking to Dick and she's this totally different person from what you see in the Dr. Phil show. Then, so this is where it gets even more interesting. This chick knew Elvis Presley. She dated one of the guys who worked for Elvis. And she like traveled around with Elvis and shit. And apparently she's written a book about this and all kinds of stuff. And we're, you know, Dick and Sean are like, what the fuck? She said, yeah, I knew Elvis. And we did. And so we're talking about Elvis and all this other stuff. Nothing like what was on the fucking Dr. Phil show. Anyhow, just, it was great. The Dr. Phil show stuff is still funny as fuck, but one, it's all fake. Which, again, is not something you didn't know. Nobody listening to this podcast is going, oh my God, I had no idea the Dr. Phil show was fake. Right? It's like Oprah. It's just made up. All right, next topic. Where am I on time? Yeah, we're doing good. I am reading a book. It's called The Doomsday Machine, Confessions of a Nuclear War Planner by Daniel Ellsberg. Now, apparently Daniel Ellsberg, whose name I vaguely heard before, had something to do with, hang on, the Pentagon Papers. I don't know exactly what the Pentagon Papers are. Once again, I've vaguely heard of these, but it is what it is. This book, so, all right, so Daniel Ellsberg was apparently a civilian who worked in the highest levels of the government and got involved with auditing and critiquing nuclear war planning back in the, starting off in the Eisenhower days. This book is fascinating and terrifying for multiple reasons. Now, I don't know about you, but when I think about the Cold War, especially the early days, you know, the Cold War nuclear initiation and retaliation system. In my mind, you know, we have this thing where, okay, the president orders the nuclear war and it filters down and the missiles are launched and the bombers are dispatched and all this other stuff. And the things happen and there's fail safes in place and everything's been thought out and all this other stuff. And it there's control. There's control over it. Man, I tell you what. There apparently was not anywhere near as much control as people thought. And the fact that something didn't accidentally go wrong is kind of impressive. And we'll come back to that. Let me pull some things out of my memory here from this book. All right, well, let me start with the big one before I forget it. Here's maybe the biggest one. There were people who sat around and planned the nuclear attack out in great detail. And so by that, as a part of that, so let's say you're going to launch, because of course there's also this massive overkill. Let me just throw this in real quick, okay? I'm not a fucking anti-nuke freak. I have no problem dropping a nuclear bomb on somebody. A great one, aren't you an anarchist? Yeah, but once again, self-defense. One of the problems, let me digress for a second. I think one of the problems, too, with our entire nuclear strategy, our, because, you know, you and I are involved in making these decisions, our nuclear strategy is, and I don't know that this is true, this is an assumption I'm making, but it seems to me that the emphasis is always on, oh, let's make a nuclear missile that makes a bigger explosion, right? And bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. This is how many times that of Hiroshima or whatever. When what we actually need, again, the we, what we actually need is we need a small number of really big nuclear missiles to scare the shit out of the rest of the world. Because once again, I have no problem with being able to sit here and say, hey, if you fuck with us, we'll just nuke the entire world and everybody dies. Anyone who says that's not a deterrent is stupid. Okay, that is a deterrent. But you only need so many of those missiles, right? There's this point where you go into overkill, and overkill isn't funny, and overkill isn't useful, and overkill is not cute, and overkill costs a fuck ton of money. You don't need the fucking overkill part. Once you can nuke the entire planet Earth out of existence once, you're good. I mean, I saw, I want to say there's a number in here somewhere where we today supposedly have something like 4,000 nuclear missiles or some shit. I mean, honest to God, we need about 700 of them. That would do the fucking job. That would wipe out most people on the planet Earth. The rest of that shit is just flushing money down the toilet. The other thing we need is, instead of trying to make nuclear explosions that are however many times that of Hiroshima, we need some nuclear weapons that make explosions. God, hold on, voice. Sally sells seashells by the seashore. Sally sells seashells by the seashore. All right, back. We need some nuclear warheads that make explosions that are like one quarter of Hiroshima. Why would we need that, great one? Because you would fucking use them to blow people up when they, attack your country, but without destroying the entire fucking planet. And if you're saying, well, would President Great One? Yes, President Great One would goddamn, you bet your ass I'd drop a fucking tactical nuke on somebody. It'd scare the shit out of them and do the fucking job. So anyhow, in planning for nuclear war, especially in the early days, while it was mostly bomber-based, as opposed to, I think probably nowadays it's entirely missile-based. I don't know, do we have any bombers with nuclear bombs that we're going to like fly over the other country and drop it? I rather doubt it. I'm sure it's all missiles nowadays. But even with missiles, this is still a thing. So you got two bombers that are going to bomb Moscow or whatever, right? Well, you've got to time it so the one bomber flies over, drops its bomb, nuclear explosion happens. Now the second bomber, if that bomber is too close, when that explosion goes off, that explosion will destroy the second bomber, right? So you got the first bomber's got to go in, drop the bombs, get out of range of the bomb, the nuclear explosion goes off. The second bomber's got to be far enough away that it doesn't get caught. And then everything dies down enough for the second bomber to go over Moscow. It drops its bomb, right? And then the same thing with missiles, because you got a big enough explosion. You got one missile comes in, hits Moscow, blows up. If the second missile is too close behind it, the second missile gets caught in the explosion or the firestorm or the windstorm or whatever. And so all of this has to be timed out. So you got one airplane taking off from one airbase, and a different airplane takes off from a different airbase in a completely different place. They both have to bomb Moscow, right? So you have to figure out exactly when each one should take off so that the one gets there at the right time and the other one gets there at the other time. So they sit around, they'd spend an entire year. They would revise the plan every year. They spent an entire year working on this plan, each year updating it, so that all of the bombs could be dropped without interfering with each other. Now, at this point, some of you are sitting here thinking, well, how's that really going to work out? Okay, and that's his point. The first thing is their plan doesn't account for wind. So what if one airplane, the airplane takes off, airplane A takes off when it's supposed to, airplane B takes off when it's supposed to, but airplane A is flying into the wind, airplane B is flying with the wind. So airplane A will get there after it's supposed to, airplane B will get there before it's supposed to. Your entire plan just went to shit because of this thing called the wind, which nobody can predict. So we spent an entire year creating this elaborate plan for bombing the Soviet Union, that isn't going to work. The other problem, of course, and those of you who are young will have no concept of this. So, see, there was this time called the Dark Ages. And in the Dark Ages, there was not internet and cell phones and 4G. And so let's say you had an airbase up in Alaska. Your airbase in Alaska, the only way it had contact with the rest of the United States was with radio. And due to atmospheric disturbances, you might be out of radio contact for hours or even days. So the entire nuclear war plan was based on the president of the United States says go, and the go signal is transmitted to all the air bases, and all the air bases launch their bombers, or all the not launch necessarily launch their bombers, but all the air bases say go at the same time. And so this air base, it's like go, you wait 3 minutes, you launch your bombers. This air base over here, you say go, they wait 17 minutes, they launch their bombers. This one over here, you say go, they wait 32 minutes, they launch their bombers. But because of communications in the 1950s, getting the go signal to every airbase at the same time wasn't going to happen. So the base in Alaska may not get the go signal until 14 hours after it's given. But remember, we, by we I mean the taxpayers, paid people to spend an entire year coming up with this elaborate plan, which will not work because of wind and will not work because of communications difficulties. On top of that, because there was only time to produce one plan per year, remember this was before computers also, I mean, you know, nowadays you could shove all this into a computer simulation and spit out some numbers, which would still be worthless because the computer simulator still can't predict wind. There was only one plan. One plan for complete total nuclear destruction of the Soviet Union, taking everything we had, throwing it at them, saving nothing in reserve. Right? So no reserves in, you know, for retaliation from the Soviet Union. You just throw everything at once and hope and pray it fucking works. But it gets better. Not just throwing everything at the Soviet Union, throwing everything we have at the Soviet Union and China. There was no plan, there was no contingency, there was no ability to limit the nuclear strike. And by that, I mean at all. You could not limit, the president could not limit the nuclear strike to only the Soviet Union or only China. If we engaged a nuclear war with Soviet Union or with China, then they were both going to get nuked. There was no way to just say, hey, we're going to drop a couple of nukes on Moscow and get the Soviet Union to surrender. No, you have to nuke the entire fucking one quarter of the goddamn planet or nothing. That was the brilliant fucking plan that a bunch of fucking geniuses paid with our tax money came up with. Now, on top of this, see, the geniuses, because if you watch the movie, it's a great movie. It's called Failsafe, and it's about a bomber with nuclear weapons that in the process of a drill thinks the drill is not a drill and goes off on its mission to drop a bomb on a major city in the Soviet Union. And so the command has to attempt to get them to turn around. And they're trying to get this bomber to, you know, to understand, no, look, this, it was a drill. It's not the real thing. But the bomber crew is so well trained that they're like, no, you got to do this. We didn't get the fucking signal, blah, blah, blah. And so anyway, watch the movie Failsafe. It's great. So you get this impression that, oh, there's this elaborate system in place to prevent accidental nuclear war. Okay, well, turns out, there's a whole chain here. Yeah, I gotta figure out how to even come at this. So the way the system is supposed to work is the president gives the code, and then the code is transmitted, of course, through not the internet, because the internet didn't exist, and not 4G cell phones, because those didn't exist, but through the radio and everything. And so it gets to the airbase, and the airbase launches their fucking airplanes, and then they pull out their, president sends the code, and the airbase pulls out their envelope, and they open it up, and oh, look, the code matches. So they send the code to their airplanes with the bombs. And the airplane pilots open up their little fucking envelopes, and oh, there's the code. And then they go off and they bomb shit. Well, the code in the envelope was the same fucking code everywhere. So all anybody had to do was open an envelope and read the code and go on the radio. Because remember, this is before. So you could come on the radio and say, hey, we just got the go code. This is the code. Nobody can really go back and verify that. And so when Ellsberg is saying to these generals, well, what stops people from doing this? And the general's like, well, but the thing is in an envelope. And like, well, what stops somebody from opening the envelope? Well, they wouldn't do that. It's like, we were one opening of an envelope away from any fucking Yahoo fucking sending out the code and releasing nuclear weapons. How did we get through this again? Holy shit. There's way more. Just the book is good. Highly recommend it.